Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we are moving on to the sixth chapter of the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. There are seven chapters, and we have this whole week, really, to do six and seven, but because the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is considerably longer than the first part, I'll probably try to finish this first part today and tomorrow if I can, and then go on to the second part on Wednesday or Thursday perhaps, just so we can get a start on it. But the test on Friday will only be on the first part. And it's basically just going to be about, well, you'll need to know the different people who Narada approaches. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Part 1, Chapter 6. Narada Muni arrives in, well, he's already arrived in Dwarka, but he arrives in the inner chambers of the main palace in Dwarka, having been sent by Maharaj Ugrasena, because so many of the Yadus were waiting there in the Sudharma assembly hall for a long time, but Krishna hadn't come. So Narada was inspired to go and meet Uddhava, who he had been told was the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, and Ugrasena said, while you're at it, can you see if you can get Krishna to come so that we can start our meeting? So, Narada, every time he visits the next person, he becomes more ecstatic. So as he goes to meet Uddhava, he is completely overwhelmed. He's sometimes tripping and falling on the ground, sometimes standing stunned and motionless. Sometimes his body is trembling, sometimes he's rolling on the ground, sometimes he's crying as if in great distress. Sometimes shouting and jumping, sometimes singing and dancing. Just most astonishing display of symptoms of transcendental ecstasy. And in fact, they are described as, it is described at least, that all the transformations of priceless Krishna prema converged in Narada's body at once. They were all there. Yes, so Narada himself is pretty advanced devotee. All the symptoms of love of God were simultaneously present as he went to meet Uddhava. Maharaj Parikshit, who is reciting this to his mother Uttara, tells her, listen carefully. In other words, you're about to hear something special now, something extra special. So, when Narada Muni walked in, he found out, when he walked into those inner chambers, then he found out Krishna was, something was wrong with Krishna. He was disturbed, actually. And he was still sleeping. Sometimes it happens to devotees if life is getting a little tough. It's a little hard to get them up for mongolarity or something like that. Anyway, Krishna was very disturbed, actually. He was extremely disturbed. and it's already perhaps the middle of the day or something like that, but he's still not up yet. He's lying on the bed or on the floor, having fallen off the bed. He's lying there with the sheets just over him, just spread-eagled on the ground. And Uddhava has been with him, trying to rouse him and encourage him and cajole him that, come on, let's go, let's get into it. Yeah, let's get it together. But he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. So he gave up. So Uddhava, he came out of Krishna's quarters, out into the next room, and there were all the very, very close associates, like Lord Balaram and Devaki, Rukmini, Satyabhama, Rohini, people like this, were there with Uddhava. And there were many people, actually, many servants and many different associates and assistants, and one rather, in fact, very intriguing character who, those of you who have not read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you may not have been introduced to yet in your time in Krishna consciousness so far, but her name is Padmavati. She is the queen, the wife of Ugrasena, who is the king of the Yadus, the king of Dwarika, and the father of Kamsa. So she is the mother of Kamsa. Actually, he's not the father of Kamsa, but we'll come to that shortly. But officially, he is at least the husband of the mother of Kamsa, and was at the time that he was born. Although, time that Kamsa was born, although he is not the father of this outrageous demon, Kamsa. Narada Muni came in there, just outside Krishna's rooms, and there was Uddhava and Balaram and Rohini and Rukmini and Satyabhama and Devaki and various others and Padmavati. They're all in a state of shock because of the condition of Krishna. It is really very disturbing. He is disturbed and they're disturbed because he is disturbed, but really disturbed. So they saw Narada Muni coming in this most extraordinary condition. All the symptoms of Krishna Prema just completely taking charge of him simultaneously. Just ruled by the emotions of love of God, the ecstasy of love of God. So they saw, here comes Narada Muni acting in very extraordinary ways. So they tried to calm him down to some extent. They were not able to. They told him, we've never seen you like this before. In other words, two things. They had seen him before. He was no stranger to Dwarika. He gets around, although he's generally regarded as a resident of Vaikuntha, but Narada Muni, he does get around. So they knew Narada Muni there in Dwarika. And second thing, they had never seen him in that condition. So perhaps he had never been in that condition before. But it was really most astonishing. So Narada, completely overwhelmed with these ecstatic symptoms, came in, threw himself on the ground, started pleading with everyone that, please, I beg you, with plaintive words. Please allow me to meet Uddhava, who was just right there. But Narada Muni didn't see him because he was just in too much of a state of consciousness. So Narada is begging one after the other, please allow me, help me to meet Uddhava and make my life complete. Or if I cannot meet him, if that is too much to ask, at least let me have one particle of dust from his lotus feet, and I will consider my life to have been a success, to be a success. This is the appeal of Narada Muni regarding Uddhava. So then, as usual, Narada Muni goes into very enthusiastic glorification of Uddhava and his different qualifications as far as being the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, different symptoms and evidences for that, for being the greatest devotee and the true recipient of the Lord's supreme mercy. So he gives some very important reasons, and they're highly authorized. I think all of them, or so many of them at least, are coming directly from Krishna himself in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna glorifies Uddhava, particularly in the 11th canto, but elsewhere also. Particularly in the 11th canto, Lord Krishna glorifies Uddhava very highly. So there are a number of points. Uddhava says that the Lord says, Krishna says, that Uddhava is one of his expansions. That's 11, 16, 29. Vasudevo Bhagavatam Twam tu Bhagavateshvaham. Among those entitled to the name Bhagavan, I am Vasudev. And you, Uddhava, indeed represent me among the devotees. Yes. So, he's representing Krishna. He's a type of expansion of Krishna. Krishna is showing his presence. Krishna is showing his own presence amongst the devotees in the form of Uddhava. Of course, Uddhava is not Vishnu Tattva, but in terms of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, oneness and difference, then there is a certain degree of oneness there between him and Krishna. We talked about that the other day, how he looks like Krishna, people mistake him for Krishna, he's more beautiful than Pradyumna. Yeah. Why does he look like Krishna? Why is he blackish blue? Because he's always absorbed in thinking of Krishna. So he's always got that. He's in that Krishnaized state. So that was one thing, that the Lord calls him one of his own expansions in 11:16:29. Then the Lord says that no one is more dear to him than Uddhava. This is 11:14:15. Na tata me priyatama atma yonir na shankara na cha sankarshano na shriya naivatma na yata bhavan. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Balaram, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self is as dear to me as you. Uddhava is a very special devotee. Actually, it is a fact that he is the highest devotee outside of Vrindavan. He's a very special person. So here, the Lord is saying that neither Lord Brahma, who is a direct son of his, nor Lord Shiva, who is a personal friend of his, nor Lord Balaram, who is directly his brother, nor the goddess of fortune, who is directly his wife, nor even himself is as dear to him as Uddhava is dear to him. So, you know, these are very important. He has chosen very specific important people and made the point that Uddhava is more dear than all of them. In his commentary on this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, in his Bhagavatam commentary to 11.14.15, Sridhar Swami, the famous commentator, says that when Lord Krishna spoke this particular verse to Uddhava, he was intending saying, the last line is, Naivatma cha yata bhavan. Bhavan means you. It's a very respectful way of saying you. It's like saying your good self or sir, something like that. It's a respectful mode of address. So he says that when Lord Krishna spoke this, he intended saying, Naivatma cha yata bhakta, that all these different people, Brahma, Shiva and so on, none of them are more dear to me or as dear to me as you devotees, as the devotees, meaning the topmost devotees. But the Lord was so ecstatic in the company of Uddhava that in that ecstasy of friendship with Uddhava, at the last moment, he just switched it to Yata Bhavan. And, yeah. So an interesting point is made, which I didn't draw your attention to a few days ago when we were doing the third chapter, when the Lord is talking about... Sanatan Goswami, in his commentary on verse 84 in the third chapter, he quotes this verse when he is praising Prahlad. In other words, this verse can be used in relation to other devotees, but it most appropriately, outside of Vrindavan at least, can be applied to Uddhava, and in fact in a direct sense it was spoken by the Lord to Uddhava. So no one is more dear to the Lord than Uddhava, according to the Lord. Then, Uddhava's good fortune, which is born of Krishna's mercy, is described by the Lord himself in Shastra. So 11.11.49. My dear Uddhava, O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, because you are my servant, well-wisher and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear as I explain these great mysteries to you. So, the Lord... See, this is the 11th canto. This is the Uddhava Gita. And there is Bhagavad Gita, of course. We all know Bhagavad Gita very well. And that is very important. Krishna speaks the same verse, or the Sanskrit wording is not exactly the same, but the message is the same. Sa evayam maya tejya yoga prokta pratana bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam cheta dutamam. This very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you. Because you're my devotee and my friend, therefore you can enter into the mystery of this understanding. So in this verse, this is now Uddhava Gita. It's basically the same thing is being said. Because you're my servant, well-wisher, and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. So you've got Bhagavad Gita, but Uddhava Gita is like a step further. The two are connected. Uddhava Gita is like going on from Bhagavad Gita, actually. So, in other words, the fact that the Lord has spoken, the Lord has chosen to speak this more advanced knowledge to Uddhava indicates the special position of Uddhava, even above Arjuna, and Arjuna is already very special indeed. So that is an example of Uddhava's good fortune, born of the mercy of the Lord, as described by the Lord himself. Then there's another verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.4.31. Na udhavo vapi manyuno yadgunar nardita prabhu ato madvayanam lokam grahayan ihatishta tu. Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way, because he is never affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore he may remain in this world to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So just look at that. Krishna is saying he's not even inferior to me in any way. So from different angles of vision, all of them very important, Narada Muni has substantiated the good fortune and highly advanced position of Uddhava, who happened to be there, although Narada Muni hadn't seen him yet. So Uddhava came forward, grasped hold of Narada Muni's feet, embraced his lotus feet. You know, we see devotees sometimes come and touch each other's feet. I don't think we normally see devotees embrace other devotees' feet in, you know, like extremely heartfelt ways. Not, you know, joking or sort of, you know, in that sort of jolly mood of friendship and so on, but really from the heart. So Uddhava, he did that. He embraced the lotus feet of Narada Muni. And he held on to them for a while. And while he was doing that, he was thinking of many other devotees who he considered to be more fortunate than himself. And as he was doing that, he cried helplessly, thinking himself the most fallen, the most wretched and unqualified. However, then he stopped and composed himself and told Narada, actually, what you have said is true. Yes, because it's all coming from the Lord himself, so how could it be otherwise? And he says that even the Lord himself has told me that whatever you say is true. You are the most intelligent. But then he says, I'll just read what he actually says. Here and there now, I'll read a few excerpts because some very interesting points coming up, and they're being expressed extremely, very beautifully, very nicely. And our translator, Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, has put them so extremely nicely. It is really most wonderful. So here then, Uddhava says, he is, of course, responding to Narada's claims that he is the most fortunate. So he says, in my recent trip to Vraja, what I saw took my pride in my special good fortune and suddenly crushed it to dust. Since then, I have understood the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, of love for him, and of those who possess that love. Just by what I saw in Vraja, I came to be most blessed. I was swept away in an ocean of ecstasy, thinking myself completely favored by the Lord, a recipient of his most extreme mercy. So what did he see? Well, he saw particularly the gopis. He doesn't talk about that exactly yet. Then he is referring to, well, then he says that after I saw that, those things, he feels he cannot describe it, actually. This is how Sanatan Goswami presents it. He feels he cannot say it, but he just says, what I experienced. What he experienced, he can't say. But he did say it already in two verses from the Bhagavatam. Among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahman, or even as Lord Brahma himself? The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members who are very difficult to give up, and have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. So Uddhava speaks like this, and then he tells Narada, he says, I beg you again and again, I appeal to you, please do not ask me any more about this. There may be undesirable consequences. Now, we might be a little surprised to hear that. Stop telling me about Krishna. Stop telling me about the devotees, the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Don't tell me, don't ask me any more. The consequences may be very bad. So, this is the problem. This is the problem with Krishna. that he cannot forget the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And so he is just repeatedly, time and time again, almost constantly, just going off into some sort of trance of remembrance of them and just leaving within his mind, leaving Dwaraka behind. So Uddhava appeals. He says, I beg you again and again, please do not ask me to say more about this. Because Uddhava knows. This is the problem. This is why they're all there outside Krishna's room. Why they're all there in a state of shock. Why they don't know what to do. Because he knows if we talk about it more, it's going to make it worse. Which it does. Because after all, when you start getting into subjects like this, particularly Uddhava, Narada Muni, and these devotees, when they start discussing things like this, they cannot stop. So then, knowing the inner meaning of Uddhava's words, Rohini spoke with tears in her eyes. Now, how did she know the inner meaning of Uddhava's words? I mean, what were Uddhava's words? All he said was, I went to Vrindavan and I saw something. He didn't say what he saw. He couldn't say what he saw. He said, I just went there and what I saw crushed my pride in being fortunate into dust. So now how did Rohini know what he was talking about, even though he didn't say it? Because she had been there. And she had seen these things with her own eyes. So now, what we're going to see, this is an interesting point. Now there's going to be a number of people are going to speak in terms of their own realizations or their own experiences with Krishna, with the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and yeah, basically like that. Rohini. Now some of them, like Rohini, like Uddhava and Lord Balaram, some of them have been to Vrindavan and seen, and they know these people, they have met these people, the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They know what they're like. They know how they love Krishna. So now, those people, when they talk about the situation, so they're very sympathetic to Krishna, and they want some other arrangement to be made other than Krishna going back. Anyway, let us just see how it unfolds. But it really is interesting. And then you've got Padmavati, who is just like a, I don't know what's the right word, sort of like a mega spanner in the works. She is just coming from another realm of consciousness altogether, as we'll see. So Rohini, she understood the inner meaning of Uddhava's words, that I saw something. What I saw, it affected me so much. So with tears in her eyes, then she began to speak. Let us read what she said. Alas, dear servant of Sri Hari, the residents of Vraja have, by evil fate, been all but slain. They have lost the last trace of good fortune and are drowning in an ocean of gloom. There they suffer, poisoned and scorched, in the flames of an underwater fire.
That must be quite something. So please, do not destroy my few moments of happiness by reminding me of them. Here in Dorica, I had kind of forgotten about them for the last few minutes. And, you know, how much they're suffering. But now you're reminding me. So please do not destroy my moment of happiness by reminding me of them. When Sri Vasudev brought me back from Gokula, the cries of the greatly distraught Yashoda made even stones shed. So she says that I came back and I told Krishna about this, but all he did was send Uddhava with a message. Just see. What type of reaction was that? Is this, this didn't help at all. Is this really his mercy? And she says, even when the demons would come and attack Vrindavan, those bridge busses, usually they didn't worry very much, maybe momentarily sometimes, but they always felt protected by Krishna, so it was never really a problem. Yeah, for themselves at least, they were not worried. But they were worried for Krishna. But it seems like Krishna is not worried about them. He just went to Mathura to satisfy his other devotees. And he forgot them. So she is very sympathetic to the Brijbasis and a little critical of Krishna. Then the crazy Padmavati speaks, criticizing the Brijbasis. Now, Padmavati, yes, she is very extraordinary. She is Ugrasena's wife, so she's the queen of Dwarka. She is very, very important person in Dwarka. But she is crazy. Actually, she is kind of degraded. In her younger days, well, one demon named Drumila disguised himself as Ugrasena and had sex with her. The result was Kamsa. And she was very attached to Krishna. And Sanatana Goswami says that when Kamsa was killed by Krishna, Padmavati lamented uncontrollably. Everyone else was happy.
You said she was very attached to Krishna.
Kamsa. Well, she's kind of attached to Krishna. But I meant to say then, if I said Krishna, I meant to say Kamsa. Yeah. So she says, just see, since childhood, our Krishna, in the forest full of thorns, has guarded the cows of those merciless cowherds. They never even gave him shoes. And when tormented by hunger, he sometimes ate a little bit of their milk products. The cowherd women punished him by tying him with rope. And they scolded him abusively. When he was young, Krishna had no choice but to tolerate all that pain. But what does he have to do for those people now? So, you can see where she stands. She is not sympathetic to the Brijbasis. So, but Rohini continues speaking, just like ignoring Padmavati, which basically everyone does, and continuing to kind of criticize Krishna. She says, oh, well, now Krishna's in Mathura or Dwarka. He is the king of rulers of kings. He's worshipped by the demigods. He no longer thinks of the Brijbasis. This is Rohini. So then, Rukmini, Krishna's first queen, who's deeply attached to Krishna, she does not appreciate what Rohini has said. And, yeah, she doesn't appreciate that. She doesn't appreciate Padmavati that much either. So she says, now she's going to describe the situation now with Krishna. What this whole problem is about, why they've all gathered there and they're all just so disturbed. What is wrong now with Krishna? My dear mother, she's speaking to, well, I guess Rohini. You don't understand the inner feelings of Krishna at all. His heart is softer than newly churned butter. Why are you saying these things? Just hear from me what I have heard. Sometimes at night, he says this and that in his sleep. Sometimes in a most sweet voice, he lovingly calls his cows by name in his sleep. Sometimes he calls his girlfriends or some of the cowherd boys. And sometimes, while asleep, he acts as if placing his flute to his mouth and assumes his enchanting threefold bending form. That must be quite something. While he is asleep in bed, he does this. Assumes his tribhanga sundar form. Threefold bending form, like on the altar, but in his sleep. While asleep, he sometimes says, Mother, give me some fresh butter. Sometimes he calls out to me, Oh, Sri Radha, or Oh, Lalita. Sometimes he pulls on my sari and asks me, Chandravali, what are you doing? And sometimes he drenches the pillow on his bed with floods of tears. Then at times he suddenly wakes up, rises from bed, and cries in a pitiful voice, drowning us in an ocean of pain and grief. Just last night, he must have seen something in a dream, because today he has been weeping sorrowfully and is beside himself with agitation. Now he is lying in bed as if asleep, his sheets pulled over his head. He has not even performed his morning duties. So this is the problem. Krishna has become incapacitated due to separation from the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He has become just incapable of functioning in Dwarka because of his separation and his feelings for the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So then Satyabhama speaks. She is, of course, like Rukmini, you could say, pro-Krishna. I mean, not that Rohini is anti-Krishna, but she just doesn't appreciate the fact that he hasn't gone back. He just wrote a letter. It's like, not first class, it's something like that. But Rukmini, she is very pro-Krishna. And so is Satyabhama. Satyabhama corrects Rukmini by saying that it is not only at night while sleeping that he does this. He does this while he is awake also. So this is a serious problem in Dwarka. Krishna is becoming progressively more and more bewildered due to separation from Vrindavan, separation from the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So that is Rukmini and Satyabhama in favor of Krishna, you could say, or very sympathetic to Krishna. Now Lord Balaram will speak, supporting Rohini. Now remember, Lord Balaram has recently been in Vrindavan, so he knows. Therefore, he supports Rohini in that he is highly sympathetic to the inhabitants of Vrindavan and not so appreciative of Krishna that he hasn't gone back. So Lord Balaram, he actually became angry with Rukmini and Satyabhama and said, no, he's deceiving us. That's all. Lord Balaram says, I was there. I was there for 2 months. And I tried to help them to get over their separation from Krishna. I couldn't do it. He says, I promised them hundreds of times that don't worry. As soon as I get back, I guarantee I will get Krishna to return. He promised hundreds of times in 2 months. He must have been promising a lot. Must have been a big subject matter, a regular subject of discussion. So he promised hundreds of times, as soon as I get back, I'll definitely get Krishna to come. Somehow he escaped. It was extremely difficult, but somehow he escaped. He hurried back and he appealed to Krishna as soon as he saw him. Please, you have to go back to Vrindavan. Krishna said, certainly, I will go back. But he didn't. So Lord Balaram closes by saying, you can know a person's heart. He says, a person may say so many things, but it may be deceptive. But you can know a person's heart from the way he acts. So he is not impressed with Krishna. He's not impressed. So then, Krishna in the next room heard the discussion. He came out weeping loudly and spoke in a choked voice, criticizing himself, that I am so hard-hearted. My heart must be so hard, it's like a diamond. Otherwise, by now, there's no doubt. If it wasn't like hard like a diamond, it would have shattered into pieces by now. There's no doubt. So he laments, Krishna laments, that I forgot about their love. I have to do something to help them. I've been very cruel to them. So then, what does he do? He turns to Uddhava and says, please advise me. Yes, this is Krishna. But we know what Uddhava is going to say. He's already said it, really. You've got to go back. Now. Just go. Immediately. So Devaki, now Devaki, she's in an interesting position. She is kind of in between. Because she is a resident of Dwarka. She belongs there. That's her natural place. But she has been, briefly she visited Gokula. So she has some idea, but not so much. So she interrupts and says, yes, you should give them what they want. In the purport, it is pointed out that this is a subtle way of saying, don't go. Find out what they want and we'll try and do something about it, but don't go. You should give them what they want. Padmavati, hearing this, becomes frightened. She understands that Devaki means, don't go there. Give them what they want. She thinks that Krishna may get so carried away because there's such strong feelings, and Krishna has such strong feelings also, to appease the inhabitants of Vrindavan. She is afraid Krishna may give them Dwarka. So Ugrasena, Nanda Maharaj will become the king. Ugrasena will no longer be the king, and she will no longer be the queen. So, afraid that this may happen as a kind of in-between gesture to appease the bridge busses, but not have Krishna go there. So then she speaks in a light-hearted way, trying to be kind of clever. But of course, no one takes this seriously, and for extremely good reason. She says that, I know that Krishna and Balaram, they were living there under the protection of Nanda Maharaj for about 11 years. And it must have been inconvenient for Nanda Maharaj. It must have been costly. So just send a message. She thinks that maybe Nanda Maharaj is upset because it costs so much to maintain Krishna and Balaram. Send a message immediately that allow him to calculate what the cost was, and we will give him double that to compensate him. And we will get the amount calculated exactly by Garga Muni, who's a big Brahmin and who's very expert. He'll do it very precisely. And we will make sure that he personally delivers that money, double the amount. And if Nanda Maharaj feels that he owes Krishna any money for all the work he did, herding the cows every day, then tell him he doesn't have to pay if he doesn't want to. This is her suggestion. And everyone just carries on with their conversation, just disregarding what she has said. So now Krishna acts as if he didn't hear what Padmavati said and asks Uddhava, please tell me, what do they want? Following what Devaki had said. She had said, of course she had a different meaning, but she had said, yes, they should be given what they want. So Krishna asks Uddhava, you please tell me, what do they want? So Uddhava explains that they don't really want anything but you. He takes it like when Krishna says, what do they want? Like Krishna's suggesting they want, you know, some money or some ornaments or some valuables or something, you know, sort of like some bribery, something like that. Uddhava says that when I went, you gave me some ornaments and jewelry, which I gave to them. And I expected when they received these gifts from you, I expected they'd be very happy. But actually they became even more grief-stricken. They said that, does Krishna think that this is what we're interested in? Does Krishna think that this is what we want from him? So, does he think that this is what we deserve? A few ornaments? A few jewels and things? Is that what we deserve? Is that what we are worth to him? So they became very devastated. But then Uddhava said, they only want you. And when I gave them these jewels, they condemned themselves for still living in your absence. And they immediately on the spot, they began fasting to death in front of me. But then Nanda Maharaj came and convinced them that it was all right, that Krishna will be coming back shortly, and he wants you to wear these ornaments when he comes back. And when he sees you wearing these ornaments and this jewelry, he'll be very happy. So that sort of pacified the bridge busis, because Nanda Maharaj was sure that Krishna would be back shortly. But then Krishna didn't go back. He just sent Uddhava with a kind of strange message. And when Uddhava spoke that message, the inhabitants of Vrindavan almost died in disappointment. This is one of the verses. Krishna is speaking to the gopis. You are never actually separated from me, for I am the soul of all creation. Just as the elements of nature, ether, air, fire, water, and earth, are present in every created thing, so I am present within everyone's mind, life, air, and senses, and also within the physical elements and the modes of material nature. So what is he saying? I am the super soul. Just realize that I'm present in that form everywhere, and then you won't feel separation from me. Ah, but they didn't like that. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, they didn't like that at all. That they are meant to now meditate on the super soul rather than have their personal relationships with Krishna? This is out of the question. Completely out of the question. So Uddhava then, who's very expert, made every effort to convince them that Krishna will definitely be coming soon just to keep them alive. That's all. And then they attained an amazing state of renunciation and fixedness on Krishna returning. So it's very amazing. In other words, Uddhava says that you should go back. That's what they want. They want you to go back. So then, Krishna became so struck by the statements of Uddhava, he became speechless. And he thought of going back. But then he saw Devaki and Rukmini knew that he was thinking of going back. And he thought, if I leave Dwarka, what is going to happen to them? They may enter the same state. So Krishna became confused. And he thought, he said, pass me a pen and paper, I will write another letter. So, not a very good suggestion, really. But this is what he thought under the circumstances. He was confused. He said, give me a pen and paper, I'll write them a letter saying I just have a little outstanding business I still have to settle in Mathura, and then I'll come. But Uddhava, understanding this, begged him, please, just go now, immediately. Otherwise, they may not survive. So then, Padmavati says, I have it figured out. Now I understand. These bridge busses have bribed Uddhava with milk products. So he will arrange that Krishna comes back to look after their cows. I have heard they have been finding it hard to get people to go out into the dangerous forest with the cows. But Krishna, he was happily doing it. That's what they want. They want him to go back to herd the cows in the dangerous forest. So then, Rohini, sympathetic to the bridge busses, tries to argue with Padmavati. Everyone else has ignored Padmavati. Rohini, who cannot bear this criticism of the bridge busses, that they're just trying to exploit Krishna as free labor, she tries to argue with Padmavati that when Krishna was in Vrindavan, they loved him so much that they couldn't even live for a moment if he hid behind a tree while playing. They almost died. When he went out to herd the cows, then everyone who was left in the village, somehow they got through the day. But it was like a lifetime. So, she explains that they're not hard-hearted people who are trying to exploit Krishna. They're actually very nice. Let me just read a little bit of what she says here. So she says, oh, virtuous lady. She's speaking to Padmavati. She's being sarcastic. Oh, virtuous lady. If trees or other obstacles blocked Krishna from sight even briefly, his companions at once shed tears and called out anxiously, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna!" For those who live in Vraja, daytime is like the black night at the end of the universe when Krishna's out herding the cows. Because then those in the village don't see him. So it's like the black night at the end of the universe. Millions of years, billions of years. And the blink of an eye is like a millennium. Radharani complained like that. When I blink, I can't see Krishna. This is extremely bad. In such a state, they look at the sun and the trails of dust on the road again and again and listen for the sound of the flute. Every day, Krishna takes his elder brother with him and goes out into the various forests for his pleasure, not as forced labor. He is eager to enjoy with his herds of cows and wander about in the company of his many friends. In these forests, it's not like they're horrible forests with thorns and... But there are lakes with sparkling waters and beautiful lotuses, beautiful trees and bees and birds. And it's very picturesque. There are many different charming animals. They're not dangerous animals. They have put all their natural enmity aside. And such a beautiful scene. Such a beautiful scene. It is not that Krishna was suffering there, forced to herd the cows, struggling in the horrible forest, and Padmavati says to Rohini, "You child, you are too free with your words. If what you say is true, then why do we hear that the cows and other animals in Vraja are now in danger of dying because no one is taking care of them? They're dying in separation from Krishna, actually." But she thinks that these people, they can't find anyone now that Krishna's gone to look after the cows. Therefore, they want him back for more cheap, free laboring work. So, Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna, hearing all these things, it is becoming too much. It's becoming too much, really. So, scorching anxiety dried up Krishna's lotus face. He was filled with dread. He glanced at the face of Lord Balaram, who knew the latest news from Vrindavan because he was recently there. And he saw that Lord Balaram's face was covered with tears. Lord Balaram was crying uncontrollably. And Krishna asked him, "You please describe the situation there now." So Lord Balaram said, "Why speak only about the cows, dear Krishna? All the animals in Vraja are your beloved friends, and so also are the birds and the trees, like the bandira and the kadamba, the grass, the creepers, the lush bushes have all dedicated their lives to you. Now they're all wasting away. And so too are the rivers and mountains. Some of the people, dear brother, live only on the hope that your promises were true to come back. Better you not ask to hear more news than this." The implication that some of the people live only on the hope that your promises are true. The implication is that some of them are not living. Some of them have already left this world out of separation from Krishna. So he says, better you not ask more news than this. I can only tell you that if you don't show your kindness to them soon, Yamaraj will soon show them his. That you rid Kaliya's lake of its poison has only greatened their misery. Why? Because now they cannot commit suicide. Now, please hear of still other reasons for their sorrow. In Vraja, the river Yamuna has turned so dry, she has hardly any water. And Govardhan, who when you held him up, touched heaven, has now become short. The devotees who relish the nectar of your names cannot die of starvation. Instead, their end will come in a fire in a great dry forest. All the forests are dry in separation from Krishna. So Lord Balaram is expecting any time they'll just burst into flame and all the Brijbasis living in the forest will die. Having heard this, Krishna, who is gentle by nature and tormented by the suffering of others, grasped Balaram by the neck and shed a flood of tears like a person whose life is in ruin. As he cried with loud sobs in his beautiful voice, the tears washed away the cosmetics from his body. Dear mother, he and Balaram then rolled on the ground and for a moment lost consciousness. Seeing the two lords in such unprecedented crying and lamentation, all the residents of the inner palace lost control of themselves. Rohini, Uddhava, Devaki, Rukmini, Satyabhama, and all the rest, they all lost control and sobbed again and again. When the Yadus, all the ones who were out waiting in the Sudharma assembly hall and in other places, when the Yadus heard from the inner palace the sound of distressed crying, never heard there before, they quickly came running, headed by Vasudeva and Ugrasena. The Brahmins arrived, led by Garga, along with all the other people of the city. And when they saw their beloved master in this extraordinary state, as they never had before, they too began to cry, overwhelmed. So now we have millions of people crying and crying and crying. The general populace of Dwarka, everyone was just completely overwhelmed to the point that Lord Brahma comes from Brahmaloka to see what's happening. But that we'll talk about tomorrow. That's chapter 7. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.